Hello and welcome to another episode of R&R's Ask the Expert. I'm Kayla McGowan, Editor-in-Chief, and today we're diving into how restoration companies can scale for future disasters. My special guest is Bud Summers. He's the Executive Vice President of Operations and Training at PyroClean. Bud began his career as an independent owner and operator and later expanded his experience as a general contractor, multi-unit franchise, and senior executive. In 2012, he retired from active ownership and shifted his focus to the things he's most passionate about, which are teaching, writing, and consulting. Please welcome Bud.
Hey, thanks, Kayla. It's really a pleasure to be with you. Your organization provides such incredible value to our industry, and it's great for us to have an opportunity to chat again.
Yeah, again, exactly. No, thank you so much. You know, I know you guys contribute to us regularly, so it's always awesome to kind of put faces to names and talk about something maybe that we haven't covered in writing this year. And one of them, I think, is definitely just disasters. This year has not been what we thought, starting with the fires in January. Then we had all this catastrophic flooding. And I think people probably thought, wow, if we're seeing all this, hurricane season is just going to be astronomical. And it's been everything but that for us personally here. I know Jamaica and Cuba and some other places were hit really bad, and I know some of us are deploying there to help them. But for us here in the United States and even up into Canada, you know, how do franchises like PyroClean support home and business owners in navigating the insurance claim process after disasters?
That's a great question. I think one of the things that's changed over the course of time, and I'd be interested in your opinion of this, but we've seen a consistent move that the primary carriers, that we'll call them the big five, most of them have found ways to exit the majority of their holdings out of what we would consider primary hurricane areas. 8, maybe 10 years ago, when we were going in and mobilizing, one of the things carriers wanted was, how many people do you have that are on our program or are trained to our SLAs you can leverage to take care of our policyholders that are in that area? But the reality is, a lot of that has significantly changed, especially in Florida, with the changes in the insurance industry here, where so much of it is, for all intents and purposes, what I call state funded. It's a completely different picture. So the need for generating numbers for a homeowner quickly has become far more critical. You know, it in what I like to call the old days, well, the insurance company is going to pay for it. Well, maybe, especially as deductibles have gotten higher. So we've had to spend some time helping our franchises to view and develop tools to be able to estimate very quickly, set up the possibility for self-pay, and then if in fact they choose to, and in the spirit of transparency, most of our franchises choose not to, consider what the job is going to look like if FEMA is going to be involved.
Yeah, there's so many variables. I will definitely say, not only is Florida feeling that, I think we're seeing it in California. A lot of people actually, if I'm not mistaken, had lost coverage right before the fires happened. And then they were relying on state, you know, insurance, and it's still a mess for them, unfortunately. And so I think all the variables that you just mentioned, you know, deductibles are higher. Now we're looking at self-pay, which, let's face it, right now, times are really hard for everybody, especially if they're paying higher premiums and then they're going to have to pay their deductible and potentially have to pay for the work out of pocket. It's just really hard for people to go through the process right now. Even on the business side of things, I know sometimes in commercial, I oftentimes hear like they don't even go through the insurance. It's not worth them going through the insurance. They'll just self-pay, right? And so I think that may be a shift that we're starting to see, unfortunately, at the residential side of things. And then it becomes, well, if I have to buy a house and I have to have insurance, what's the point if I'm paying self-pay, right? So I think that we may see some other snowballing things into some other industries just because it's not really helping the homeowner at the end of the day, which means it doesn't allow us to help them properly, or at least the way we're used to, right? To your point, in the good old days, we were able to say, hey, insurance will pay for that. So it's really interesting to see how times have changed, and we just continually have to adapt. I think, Puroclean is really great at providing the right tools to their franchisees. And so I know you guys are far ahead of it, but it's just really interesting because for those listening, whether you're independent or even a franchise, you need to work towards these things too, because it's not just based on, a couple of states. I think we're seeing it everywhere. And so we always say, when one person does it, somebody else is going to follow it. And that's kind of what we're seeing in the claims process right now. So it's really interesting. I think we kind of with the fires, we see it, with the flooding, we see it, and then we didn't have a hurricane season really. I mean, there's still time left. But it's probably a good thing that nothing has actually hit this year, considering we're coming off of two from last year, which is something that I don't think maybe people have thought about as a whole. We're still cleaning up from last year. We're still cleaning up from Helene and Milton, but also now these fires and floods. And so I don't know that we could also take that as consumers, that hit of having another set of disasters roll through, because now that means more time, more money on the consumer side of things, not us as, contractors. But it's a little scary to kind of think about that. So, what strategies do you guys use to scale operations and support during peak storm seasons and overlapping catastrophic events? So, I think we kind of saw that with the fires in California and then with the flooding. It was like, oh, it's in Texas, now it's in New Mexico, now it's in Milwaukee. It was just kind of everywhere. So, how do you guys scale to make that happen?
It's a great question. I think one of the things that helps us as a franchise system compared to other franchise systems is we're an open market territory system. So, you have a defined area, but we also acknowledge that you can go wherever the work goes. So, our franchise owners in a designated area where a disaster has happened are far more open to having other franchises come in and work in their area than if it's this is all mine and nobody can take it. And so it means that we, because of that, it's much easier for us to get away from the yellow pad that has 400 names on it and we're going to work our way through it, right? Because the franchises can come in. And we train our people to the phrase we use is hunt, kill, cook, and eat. Go in there, hunt your own food, find it, do it, collect it, and move on. And that way it makes it so we can generate a tremendous presence. So I think that's one of the things. The second one is we find that our franchise owners, because of we do what we call impact groups, which is 8 to 12 owners that get together, typically on a monthly call, and then twice a year they'll go and visit one particular office. And it's an opportunity for their peers to take a look at the business and make recommendations and that type of thing. So many times, if somebody is in a disaster area, they'll reach out to their impact group and they'll say, "Hey, come on down." And so there's already relationship there that makes that work. The other piece that I think has really changed the map for us is the relationship that we have with our sister company, Signal, which really focuses on large commercial jobs, has allowed our franchises to go and be part of those larger jobs and thereby learn how to do their own larger jobs. So, when I first joined Puroclean, gosh, almost 11 years ago now, right after I was here, we got a call from a franchise owner, and he said, I've got a huge job. You've got to help me, bud." And I said, "Okay." This is a fire job. He said, "It's amazing. It's just..." And I said, "Okay." And so I started talking him through it, and it was a kitchen fire that didn't even blow past the kitchen.
Kitchen.
But that was the biggest job he'd ever done, right? Now we have franchises. Well, there was a micro event in the Northwest. I guess it's almost 2 years ago now, And one of our local franchises managed 12 commercial losses. And one of those losses just came short of 8 figures. So for an individual office to be able to produce that kind of job, that's been the growth we've had in our network because we have ongoing training on how to do more commercial work. You're exactly right. The residential market is becoming, I'm going to use the word, more unstable. And the commercial market is far more predictable, especially in a larger event. Typically, they know what their coverages are. They expect to have it covered. The insurance companies expect to have somebody do it. So one of the pieces that's been critical for us is to train our franchises into how to maximize time and material and the documentation and job notes to be able to produce that. And I guess the last thing is we now have trailers full of equipment. And we have them strategically placed throughout the country. So when a storm happens, we can get multiple trailers of equipment there, and our franchises can access that. But primarily, we have that focus strictly on commercial work. Instead of having somebody come and, keep moving dehumidifiers from this residence to this residence, we expect those guys to carry that kind of equipment on their own. But we now have the ability to mobilize and to bring in trailer-mounted desk and dehumidifiers and that type of stuff. Because, as you know, when there's an event, everybody's out of equipment. It's everybody's to the max. So if we can bring those resources in and have them there with the expertise to be able to set up, produce, and monitor that equipment, now the scope of being able to manage that job gets so much easier. The fires in California, the majority of the, I have a family member that works out there for a GC, and they don't take a remodeling job that's under $10 million. So that book of clients, the majority of them are self-insured. So they were looking for somebody to not only be able to do the work, but to do it in a timely manner. And the insurance company was the non sequitur. I think we're going to see more of that, obviously not in the smaller residential market, but I think in the commercial market. A small example, but I think it's relevant. I have a house in Florida, and I also have a house in Maine. They're approximately the same square footage. My insurance for my house in Maine is about just under $800 a year. And my insurance for my house in Florida is more than 10x that number.
That's
So
insane.
it's going to become more and more an issue. I think the other thing that's going to probably happen, and it did when insurance rates were low, we had several providers that we could provide financing for homeowners. As the interest rates have worked their way back up, or worked their way up, it was much harder for those guys to make their margin. If the insurance rates dip back down, I think that'll become another play in the marketplace where you'll be able to go to the homeowner and say, "We can." One of the companies that we used would literally the homeowner would put in their name, their address, and their driver's license number, and they were getting approved for a certain amount of money, and they could literally select their payment, and in a minute and a half, they were approved, and we could begin work.
Wow.
So I think that kind of technology, especially as AI grows, that's going to be another key component. I think there's going to be a move on insurance carriers to use AI and to begin to process claims in minutes instead of hours.
Yeah, and sometimes days or months. I think we kind of see that now too. It's not fast, and so I think if we're able to leverage the technology, I think it will change on the insurance side of things. And to your point, there's a lot of variables that help you guys successfully respond and mobilize during this. I know you mentioned your guys's sister company there, Signal. You guys have a great network there beyond Puroclean, right? And I think it's really cool to see how that all works because, just to your point, they're ready for the commercial stuff. And so when a disaster does happen, if you guys needed help, that's who you would rely on. And so it's a really cool network to see that you guys have. And strategically placing your equipment is another thing. I think, we see it when something happens, everybody's trying to get everything into the same spot at the same time, and it's a disaster, right? And so, to avoid that, strategically place your equipment or have the inventory well before something ever happens. I think sometimes we still see a reactiveness in the industry instead of proactiveness. But I think this, lull time, if you will, during hurricane season has probably allowed people to maybe put some checks and balances in place and build their inventory and things like that. So, how are restoration companies addressing the workforce shortages that we are seeing, equipment supply issues, and logistical constraints when disasters hit back to back? So, for example, the fires in California, not necessarily on our side of things, but they didn't have enough water to combat, the fires. Then the flooding, I think we saw so many people respond to the flooding just because it was so catastrophic. No one company could have done it by themselves. So how do you, how do you guys address these issues? And what would your advice be to others who are facing the same issues?
Well, I think one of the things that's become a key consideration, and we will leave the names out of this, but just this last week, a large restoration brand was on a $25 million job, and they were in week two, and the carrier came in and wanted proof that the 250 workers that were on that job were all, in fact, legal. And within an hour of starting that process, they lost the job. So it's not just a matter of seeing if you can find bodies to do the work, it's now finding bodies that meet a certain level of requirements. So we've worked with some organizations that will bring in legal workers to participate in large projects. I think that's I so that's that helps to know that we're not going to have to deal with that hurdle. From a day-to-day standpoint, we've worked really hard to make sure our online academy that we have for that our owners have access to. We've got a set of what we call storm protocol, and it's how to do a flood cut. It's how to clear contents, how to bag for disposal. And we've broken that down into small enough segments so you can take somebody with no experience, and while they're in the vehicle on the way to the first job, they're doing what they would be doing normally. They're looking at their phone, only right now they're absorbing training instead of upgrading their Instagram account. But that's been a powerful tool because we can take people and make them functional and effective within a very, very short amount of time. It used to be, you're going to leave your home market and you're going to go travel. And you're going to have to leave half your crew behind and take half your crew and hope you don't get swamped back at home. Now we've got the ability to be able to provide training for people that are that have no experience in the industry whatsoever. And so I think those are the two things we're using as it relates to storm, making sure that the people that we have are not going to get picked up for not being U.S. citizens. And the second part is creating training opportunities that are highly accessible so that they can start to get the information they need to be able. It becomes the telephone game without that, Okay, you cut this wall and I'm going to watch you and oh no, you did it. No, we want to be able to, because then if they have the tools they need and the training they have, now at that point, all we need is the attitude to work. And once we identify that, then we've got productive people that can generate revenue, and that's ultimately what you want to do.
Well, and I will definitely say the constraints change, right, when we're looking to put people onto our team. And I think sometimes it's better to have somebody who doesn't have experience, to come into our field of work just because, sometimes it's really hard to change habits. And I think that that's an advantage, especially if we're looking at the younger generation. They always have some type of device in their hand, and what better way to learn, right? If they can become content creators, they can definitely work in the industry that we're in today. And I think it also helps with people's problem-solving skills, right? That's the other thing I will definitely say. They're looking at this training and they're going through it, but now when they're faced in person, it allows them to ask the questions. Now they know what questions to ask, opposed to asking every question that they think is the right question. Now they know where they're actually going with some of these questions that they have. And I think it's the same thing with supply issues. To your guys's point, you guys have stuff strategically placed across the country, which then there won't really be supply issues when we do need them. I think that's just one of those things where people have to be proactive, right? Proactiveness is your best friend when you're in any type of disaster recovery business. And the logistical constraints too, I think that also plays into just strategy, proactiveness. And when you train your staff, right, those two other things, equipment and logistical constraints, they don't happen because your staff's trained properly. And we did see back-to-back unfortunate disasters this year. And so I think if anything, it's taught us a little bit more about, hey, there's not really a quote unquote season anymore for a lot of stuff. It's just going to happen. And so for us, that means we always have to be prepared. It's not, oh, this season's coming, we need to prepare. It's more of like, hey, 365, we need to be ready to handle anything at any time. So with billions of dollars spent annually on disaster recovery, I think last year we had a $24 billion year. I think this year we're at about $101 billion. What new growth opportunities are emerging for not just franchise systems, but even independents in our industry today?
Well, that's a great question. I think as it related to like the California fires, the biggest hurdle in that, and it still is in that marketplace, wasn't necessarily finding people to do the work. It was getting permits and authorizations to do the work. So much of the ground that was left behind was so heavily contaminated. California spent a lot of time being very proud of all the Teslas they had. Well, when that many batteries burn in one place, that creates a whole different cleanup scenario. So I think one of the things that is going to be an emerging part of our brand is dealing with the environmental concerns with the cleanup. The flooding, everything was a Category 3. Because that's you don't know what's in the water, right? And so I think in the past, I don't know that we spent as much time training to deal with the environmental components as we did, just go in and when it's a hurricane and you're making a flood cut and it's a 4-foot flood cut, that's pretty easy. But when a river blows its banks and it takes out hundreds and hundreds of homes, thousands of homes, now you're dealing with, you're not going to just take the debris and put it out on the corner and wait for somebody to come and pick it up. That stuff's going to have to be there for a while. And so you have to deal with, okay, how are we going to bag this? How are we going to contain this so that it's not going to become its own self-fulfilling biohazard. So I think that's going to be an opportunity for the people that trained for that and embrace that. I think they're going to have a real advantage moving forward as we get into bigger and bigger events. And I think, again, recognizing that the commercial marketplace is rapidly becoming the primary marketplace.
Yeah, I was going to say it's the one that's a little bit more easy to navigate and maneuver, just based on, to your point, the way things are handled in that space, insurance or not. It's just a little bit easier to navigate. It's not necessarily easy, but it's easier than what the residential space is. To your point, it's unstable, right? And and we're seeing things happen in parts of the country that otherwise haven't happened for quite some time or never happened before. And so it makes things a little complicated. But to your point, I think that the growth opportunities are in commercial. I also think that it's in potentially the environmental side of things in your business. If that's something that you're interested in, you add another layer to what you offer. But I also think, to your point, we saw with the fires, the type of licensure that you had to have, and just all these things, it made it really hard for those in our industry to mobilize and come out and help, because there's all these hoops that they had to jump through. And so I think we as contractors need to have a better understanding. Okay, if we were to ever deploy to California, Florida, Nevada, what are the requirements there? So it's again that proactive approach. If you take those approaches now, when something does happen, you will have the ability to go and help and not feel so helpless, right? I think we found a lot of people feeling really helpless because of the constraints that they faced. And so, the growth opportunities are, hey, take advantage of where you would like to go and understand what that requires. I don't think people really took into consideration the type of fires that actually came of this in California. Lithium ion batteries are all over the state of California, and it just happened to hit an area that's what a lot of people have in their home, and businesses. And so they're seeing, to your point, some other layers of potential, environmental situations that otherwise won't allow them to recover as fast. So again, if you're looking at what the industry and the future hold as far as, growth opportunities, take advantage of understanding where you want to go and do the things now that need to happen for when you do deploy your team. What systems and strategies do top restoration professionals implement to prepare their teams ahead of forecasted storms? Again, big on the preparedness, but what are the strategies that help other than being proactive? I think you've mentioned some earlier, but for you guys, I know you guys do a lot of flooding, a lot of hurricane. You guys are involved with the fires, and then of course on the signal side of things, they're on commercial. What really stands out to you that may not otherwise be something that is just top of mind for others?
Well, I think the one thing that we really try to focus on is that you need to have what I like to call a fully managed business at home. If whether it is your production manager that's going to leave, whoever is going to leave and go and chase, the infrastructure of the home office has to be strong enough to be able to sustain and in some cases thrive without that person being there. Because if you don't have that key person that is that good at their job, now you're just sending people out and hoping they find something, and hoping that they produce it. And the other piece of it is, and we've excelled at this, I think, and this applies not only to residential but commercial. We have very strong remote billing capabilities. So the people that are actually performing the work, they just get to perform the work. They get to generate the documentation, and a lot of that is through voice. And then that is uploaded, and the pictures and all of that documentation and the billing is handled every day by people, and that's what they do. They generate that billing so that the people that are on site are able to just focus on the job. And then if there's missing documentation, we're catching that the next day. I'd be calling them and say, Kayla, I'm missing the meter readings for the 14th floor. You got to give them to me. You didn't, so it keeps the job current. And then the other thing is that allows us to accelerate the billing process. So in many cases, the majority of our large losses, we've accelerated billing almost to daily and certainly weekly. So now every day that adjuster, consultant, whoever it might be, is getting an update on what's been done, what was done yesterday, what are the billable hours? What are the billable materials? And that, or some say stop, we'll just take it once a week. But that creates a level of accountability. And when they check those numbers off at the end of week one and the data matches, now it's much easier for them to accept what we give them on day two, as opposed to completing a job and then submitting it and having them say, well, where are these numbers? Yeah. So I think that I would say is at least as critical as finding the people. You've got to make sure that whoever's out there really understands the process. And so we send our project managers out to some of Signal's jobs that are not necessarily storm related so they can get that experience. We also have three IICRC certified trainers and also a consulting company that helps us to train for commercial loss. So we make sure that the person that's going out of there knows the knowledge to be able to generate a ROM, that day instead of having to communicate back and forth. So I think those are the things that AI is only going to help. And being able to leverage that technology is only going to help. I'm kind of a tech guy and I love it, but just messing around, I created a bot in ChatGPT that I could now say, give me three examples of documentation. I'm drawing an exterior wall with insulation in it and quote the S500. And because I have a copy of the S500, it'll give me the F9 note to put into the file. I think that level of technology is only going to get stronger, which is going to be good for the carriers and also good for us. And the other thing that I think that's going to happen in the next 2 years is somebody's really going to crack the code on remote monitoring. And when that happens, then it's really going to become clear, Yeah, you had this equipment there, but eight pieces weren't working, or, yes, it did take longer to dry that room. That's going to be, I think, the next major breakthrough in the industry. And obviously that will affect both residential and commercial.
Yeah, and I would definitely say to your point, just to echo, like again, proactivity is so huge. Just being proactive is part of the whole shebang here to be able to ha have a great impact. But also, you mentioned something in the very beginning where you said that everything at your home base has to be set up for success and taken care of, right? Because I think we've heard of several horror stories where it wasn't and they ended up going belly up because they weren't prepared on that end. And then, on the other side of things, when you're going to respond, sometimes you don't see that money for quite some time. So now you're footing the bill for that. And Darren and Barry both sat on a preparedness panel with me in April, and they talked about this.
Yeah.
There are some really crucial things that you have to understand prior to ever even thinking about going somewhere that's facing some situations based on storms and things like that. And then, of course, to your point, leveraging technology and leveraging your people to work in one or two capacities, not wear all of the hats, because one, it's exhausting. That's how mistakes happen. But two, to your point, they're able to focus on the task at hand, do their job every single day, and they know that their team is going to handle the rest. And I think that's part of what helps us find success as far as systems and strategies. We don't have to do every single part of the job. We need to focus on the task at hand, regardless of what seat you sit in, and it allows you as a team to collaboratively work and get the job done. And I think to your point on the side of going through the claims process, when we're able to communicate daily and weekly to the carrier, I think it also helps them better understand the whole process instead of getting something at the end and they're like, I don't understand this. Why did you do the things that you did? I also think it keeps us on track for a projection of costs, and we're able to get ahead and say, hey, actually, we found something that we weren't predicting, and we need to make some changes. Again, that's a collaborative effort and just transparency, which will make a difference. And that is part of your system and strategies, period, right? It makes a huge difference. So given the increase and intensity of these disasters, storms, fires, flooding, all of these things that we've been seeing, what does the future look like for the restoration industry, and particularly you guys at PuroClean, and how are companies able to adapt?
Well, I think the biggest game changer is who is the best at incorporating AI into the workplace. One of the things that we've several of our people are having tremendous success with is a product called Plod. And it looks like a little Bluetooth that you can wear on your shirt, or it fits on the back of your phone, and you can click the button and it'll listen to the conversation, it'll summarize it, it'll put it into a Word document. And think about what great documentation that provides for you in the job file. I think those the people that embrace that and use that effectively are going to be the ones that are going to excel, just because I speak to all of our new franchise owners when they come in, and I always ask this question: what do you think we get paid for? And this is after they've had a couple of days in the drying house and that type of stuff, and they'll say, oh, we get paid to set the equipment or to dry down the structure, or we get paid to, take good care of the customer. And after they've taken a couple of shots at it, I said, no, we get paid for one thing and one thing only: what we can document. So I think the biggest changes that we're going to see is in the level of documentation and how it's accumulated. And those people, it's kind of like when we made the change from the drying log as a piece of paper, right? I think the people that are willing to embrace and change that, and to your point, I think there's going to be some acquisitions that are going to happen within the software industry. But more importantly, now with what is available to a guy like me to be able to say, I'm going to create a bot and I'm going to be able to do that. And I started doing that by just going on a chat GPT and saying, this is what I want to do. What is my first step? What's my next step? I think the restoration industry is going to create some powerful tools apart from the software vendors that I think will end up revolutionizing the industry. And I think that's going to be really fun to watch.
Yeah, I think so too, and I think it brings me back to the phrase we've always heard, work smarter, not harder. And I think that that's where we are with technology and AI. It's allowing us to work smarter, not harder. We're taking a lot of the stuff that would otherwise take us an extensive amount of time to write down, and then it's chicken scratch and you're trying to type that over and all these things. Now, to your point, Plod and even just like the 360 documentation and remote monitoring that is coming and all of those things, it will really make a difference, and it'll make us more efficient at the end of the day. I think that's the other thing is, we work a lot of long hours, and these little tiny advancements will help us get some time back. And I think, instead of maybe a 14-hour day, we might get down to 12 and then 10, right? And it would be nice to see how that happens, but it's going to take time. And to your point, I think if we don't embrace the technology and the AI side of things, we will get left behind. And not just we, I mean, those people will be kind of irrelevant for those who are actually implementing these things. Our customers are adopting technology really quickly too. And so we have to keep up with that. We have to keep up with the carrier. So it's really interesting to see where technology has taken us. I mean, gosh, I think before COVID, no one was really live streaming, right? Everything was done in person. And look how far we've come since then. And I think we're going to see the same type of evolution and advancement in technology and AI as we saw with, Zoom. And now we have like WebEx and Teams and all of these things. I definitely see that happening with technology, and it'll help us better prepare and respond to future disasters as well. So, Bud, I don't have anything else. Do you have anything before we sign off?
I guess the one thing I'd say is that I think another thing that's going to be a direct benefit from AI is you're going to see a higher degree of employee satisfaction, because they're not going to be frustrated with, I don't know how to document this, and you're telling me I need to. If we take that off their plate, now their purpose is to go and do the work to help somebody in their time of need. That's something an employee can get behind and can feel good at their end of their 14-hour day. Then I did a great job filling out that paperwork. I think that's going to increase employee satisfaction, and that's going to increase longevity in our field. So I think the future is bright, and I think those that are willing to embrace change are going to have tremendous success. I also want to thank you for this time. I think R&R provides a valuable resource. I will tell you, I faithfully read it when it was paper. I mean, it's been a quality standard in our industry for a very long time, and I appreciate being a part of the show today.
Yeah, no, thank you, bud. It's always a pleasure to get to chat, and I'm glad you're able to share some of your thoughts. And, for those listening, I know they're going to take something from it because I certainly did. That's one thing that I really love about doing this is, I learn something new every time. And honestly, we can't be successful without people like you providing us with the right information to share. And so I'm so excited that you came on. I look forward to having you on again and potentially having you send over some of those pieces that can be read in paper form or on digital form. But as always, thank you guys for tuning in to this episode of Ask the Expert. We will see you on the next one. Take care.
Take care.